Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
If everything is connected, therefore there is nothing which cannot be connected. Okay, it seems like a kind of a logical statement, but what that means is no matter what I see, hear, smell, taste, feel, sense, experience, while I'm sitting with you and working with you, they're all connected. And my only job is to sense through how does that all connect and configure to creating a story arc, which doesn't have to be real, but just a story arc so you can understand your life from a dynamically different perspective so it creates change.
Hey everyone, this is Judy with Wellness Renaissance. That, the voice you just heard, was the lovely voice of Amy Vasterling of Intuitive Pathfinder. And in that little snippet, she kind of encapsulates exactly what she does. And I'm going to read you just a little snippet from her website just to sum it up better than I can. Amy defines an intuitive pathfinding role as one who shares information in a motivational way, helping you through this information to build half of a bridge. Then she shares tools you can use to fully bridge the expanse of the situation. Amy's an intuitive that does readings and works with people actually in various capacities, but the intuitive readings is one of the things that she does. She is very skilled at asking the right questions and helping people get to maybe better answers or more useful answers to life's little conundrums, relationships, parenting, next steps, all that fun stuff. We had a really, really fantastic conversation. There's a lot of stories she shares and some tools and ideas and some really cool insights to help us make some sense of the world we're living in right now. And that is always appreciated. Before we dive in, I'm just going to front load this with a couple, one housekeeping thing and one public service announcement. The housekeeping thing is, if you listened to last week's episode, I mentioned a integrative health potluck that's happening this Thursday, November 8th. So hopefully you're listening to this podcast as it's coming out. But I wanted to mention this again. It's being put on or organized by Dr. Laura Hill. And the whole point is to bring folks together who are, well, health enthusiasts would be one description, and to create clarity around that definition, less about health enthusiasm that helps you to run a marathon, but more about the enthusiasm of health, wellness, community, integrative healthcare options, that kind of thing. I'm going to actually just read you the little description on the Facebook page so you know exactly what we're talking about. And I quote, "A gathering of like-minded wellness practitioners, clients, and enthusiasts for a joyful and fulfilling experience of friendship." You know, when you're at a family gathering and you accidentally and innocuously let the word, quote, energy, unquote, somehow slip out, and you see their eyes start to dart towards the exits. Or when you feel that uncomfortable feeling rising after you realize you just used the words gluten-free at Thanksgiving dinner. Isn't it amazing on those sometimes rare occasions when you can finally be surrounded with your people who speak your language and light you up with theirs? There's more, but I will stop there. So hopefully that gives you kind of a clue on what this is all about. And the reason that I'm putting this on the podcast is this concept of gathering people together and sharing what people are doing and experiencing and finding these folks, the like-minded folks, is so much in keeping with what my podcast is all about. And if you're not in Duluth, Minnesota, perhaps hearing this can be an inspiration of something that you can do in your own community. So that is why I am calling this event out specifically. I'm going to be there. I'd love to meet you. So come on down. Just make sure that you've RSVP if possible. It's happening again Thursday, November 8th. And It is at 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Toasties downtown Duluth. Okay, on to my little public service announcement, or maybe better described as a plea. I think of this right now as I sit in Duluth, Minnesota. The precipitation is falling. The temperatures are also falling. But this really can apply to anybody, anywhere who has the privilege and responsibility behind a wheel of a big metal machine that they drive down the road to get from point A to point B. I know that you want to get where you're going as quickly as possible. And believe me, I feel you, man. I do too. I am so with you. But please, please remember when you're crossing those streets or making those turns and it's the foot off the brake and those 6 inches or 1 or 2 feet forward that you're making towards the person that's crossing the street. Sometimes we're walking a little slow, so we make sure that we get across the street without falling down in front of your car. Or we're not really sure what we're entering with ice, or maybe it's raining and it's hard to see what's going on. I watched so many times last year, a couple really close calls. One of them was me and another was a woman crossing the street, both at walk signs and cars just inching down. And I think one kind of lost control because it was icy outside and came barreling towards her. And I'm guessing couldn't stop while they were clearly stopped before she started to cross the street. So all I'm saying is, please remember, you're inside a car. I know you're in a hurry. I know you want to get where you want to go. But remember that those of us outside walking are not inside cars. We are cold or wet, or maybe just safely trying to cross the street if the weather isn't icky. We want to get there safely. We want you to get there safely. Please just be mindful and give a little bit of extra space between the person walking. It's very nerve-wracking to have a car inch up on us while we're trying to cross safely and get where we're going. And trust me, we want to get out of your way. I just feel like this is a habit that I'm seeing drivers get into more and more. And if you live in a hilly city like I do, and it's an icy city, that inching forward instead of sitting still seems like a lot more opportunity to lose control of the vehicle and cause someone to get hurt. And if nothing else, give the gift of less stress hormones running around people's bodies. It's a beautiful thing. And really, you're not going to get there very much faster. I can pretty much guarantee it. And if you lose control and hit the person, you're going to get there a lot slower. So there ends my, well, I would say personal plea, but actually I've had this conversation with a lot of people, so I know I am not alone. I thank you very much in advance. Okay, now we can head into the discussion with Amy. And one more quick note, if you were at the Spirit Wellness Connection last year, if Amy's name sounds familiar, you may have seen her there both at a table, and she did a presentation as well that she references in our discussion.
Welcome, Amy. I'm excited to talk to you today. This is going to be fun.
Thanks so much, Judy. I'm excited to be here.
I had the pleasure of meeting you at a wellness conference. That's and right. We had a delightful conversation. I actually mentioned your name on the Gen Quad episode. You're how I met her. So I'm finally getting to go through this conversation with you, which is great.
Yeah, thanks. No, it's exciting. It was great to meet you.
Yes.
We were so excited. It was kind of ridiculous. Like everything we'd say, we're like, wait a minute. We have that in common. Wait a minute.
Exactly. I know. It's always fun when that happens, when that sort of like just have that funky little connection.
Yeah. It's always great. I mean, you know, it's like, then you know, you found your people.
Yes, right. Exactly. Let's talk about the work that you do. And Intuitive Pathfinder is your business.
Yeah.
I want to hear about what you do, but also if you want to talk a little bit, what got you there? Where did you start? How did you hone in on this?
Sure. That's a great question. It kind of makes me laugh inside because I think sometimes you just know, and that's what I do for a living, is it's all about knowing and intuition. So I'm an intuitive reader, and I'm able, for whatever reason, to read energy in all forms. And I developed that in my 20s, and then in my 30s, I started reading for others, and I've been doing that ever since. So It really started though when I was a child, but I wasn't aware of it. And then by my early 20s, I started having premonitions or seeing things before they'd happen. Mm. And that trained me on, at some level, on how to do this. But then when I was 27, I saw something that really scared me. And it was about me, and I didn't know how to make sense of it. And I kept asking, you know, come on, praying, bring me a teacher. But no teacher arrived. Some influences arrived. But what I realized in hindsight is I really needed to do this journey by myself to keep it very pure and very much my ilk of reading. So when I teach people how to use their own intuition or use intuition where they're actually reading energy for other people, I really teach them about trust, and I teach them about keeping it clean for themselves so that they are slowly teaching themselves and not doing what I'm doing, because that's not what the world needs. You know what I mean? So the process unfolded over a lot of years, and it took a lot of frustrating situations and huge, great things. And I would say I became really savvy at asking questions in a way that got to the heart of the matter. And I naturally am an incredibly curious person. And that, I think, is something that makes a very strong intuitive, is if you're curious. I mean, I remember when I was newer at it and I was working with a client, I said to them, I don't care if you want to know. I want to know. So just hang on. I know you're paying for this reading. Let me go figure this out. But then I would get to a much deeper message. And what it taught me is then with the next client and the next client, I could really go to a much deeper value. And of course, I was giving that person value right there. But I had to be a little funny about it, you know, because I am so curious. It's hard for me to not want to know that root situation for people. So that merged with I'm a fine artist. And as a young child, I am the total quintessential child that took a pencil and wrote all the way down the hallway and all the way down the stairway on the walls. And my mom knew if she gave me an eraser to erase it, I'd just draw with the eraser.
Oh, wow.
So she made my sisters clean it up, which I'm sure you know what that yielded for me, like a lot of, you know, anger. And she put me in my room. So the two are businesses that I do both. And with the art, I have a really large series project that I'm working on of 1,000 images. And I do that in increments of 50, and then I sell it. And I also make very large oil paintings, like 6 by 4 feet.
Oh, wow.
And then I use scientific eyedroppers to draw on canvas with India ink. So that's a part of who I am, and it is a part of the business that I do. And then I also am this intuitive. And in the intuitive work, I mostly work with relationships of all sorts. It could be a parenting conundrum, or a relationship with a sister, or a lover, or whatever, a boss. And then career, focusing on, you know, if you're confused or wondering about, you know, where you want to head with career. I actually came out of being a high volume recruiter. So that sort of, you know, I've interviewed thousands of people, and I never really knew why I was so, because I was early in my 20s, but why I was so adept at, a manager would come in and say, well, I really want this person for my department. And I'd say, no, you can't have them. They're no good. This and this. And the manager would be like, how do you know that? And I just say, I just know that that's not going to be a match. And they'd hire him anyway. And then they'd come back and they'd say to me, it's not working out. And they'd say exactly what I said. Some of the managers really trusted me, and they didn't know why. I don't think they needed to know why, but they knew I could feel something beyond what they could see. Mm-hmm. So I clearly was using it then. I look back and I was using it all of my life. And I think two things really made me trust it. When I was 7, 16, and about 21, I had some experiences where two of the times my body moved without me moving it, and it saved me from something small. But looking back, I realize I have powers beyond what is common for most people, mm-hmm. or something is inside of me that is expansive in a way that's different. And it also taught me that the universe or the energy was trying to show me it's good. Like, it saved me from two things.
Mm.
It was trying to work with me. And I think that those were hallmarks or markers, milestones maybe, to help me really trust it. And then my husband, we were married quite young. And when I was having these premonitions in my 20s, I'd say to him, oh, a book is going to fall off a table at the coffee shop when we're there. But then we wouldn't be at a coffee shop for 2 weeks. And then, boom, we're at a coffee shop. Ah. The book falls off the table. It was nothing of consequence. But he gained this, like, wow, what she says happens.
Right.
And I always thought it was so that he would trust and not think that I was strange with this expansiveness. But really what I realized, you know, entering into my 40s is, oh, I can see through his eyes that he trusts it, so I trust it. Mm. And that was really, I think, what was happening there, is it was a way for me to see through somebody else's eyes that's close to me. They'll love me even if I'm this. And that then I can accept that I can accept myself in this, because it is different. My life is a little bit different because of it.
Sure. Wow. You know, it's interesting. I just recently was watching a video by a doctor who was basically kind of poo-pooing the whole concept of intuition, and you can't take care of yourself in intuition. And I listen to that, and I think of how we have these science worlds that it's nice to live by science if only that only worked, right? But there's things we can't study. There are things that we know from these experiences. I've had my own experiences of knowing something that didn't make any sense of me knowing, but it turned out to be the case. And, you know, you start to kind of go, okay, I have to listen to these things, right? It's an interesting thing, I think, trying to live in the universe and listening to you talk about being comfortable with it, because it is something that it's hard to talk about. And, you know, I know I've said things to people about, well, I feel this type of thing. And it's like, well, that's completely illogical. Okay, I totally agree. It's completely illogical. But then when it bears out, it's like those signs from the universe going, there's something going on here. Right. And to trust ourselves and to trust coming to somebody like you, to have somebody, a very practiced intuitive, it's an amazing thing to be in that space, because it helps us get in touch with our own. I think of the skeptical person who might say that's not my thing or whatever. But, and I don't know, tell me if this resonates with you, but what I think of that for that person is, go check it out and just think about it as just an option or a way to think about things or just some other points of view to consider.
Well, right. You know what I say with that is two things that, from what you said. Why does it need to be logical? Do we only value logic?
Mm-hmm.
Because it is true that intuition does not come linear, logical. It does not always make sense. But in hindsight, we can see the fullness of it. And the other piece that comes to me is this. When I was at Trader Joe's and there was a man I had a lot of groceries, and the guy said, oh, what do you do for a living? And I was teaching art classes to homeschool youth at a little school at that time. And he said, well, I saw this piece of art, and after 15 years of this woman painting it with oils, she made an all yellow canvas. And he leaned in and he said, is that good art? And I said to him, and I stopped begging for a second, but I said, did it move you? And he said, no, it's a yellow canvas. No. And I leaned in and I said, then it's not for you.
Right.
The idea behind that is, if it moves us, it's for us. And I think one thing that I really appreciate about my intuition is, and my relationship with it is, I don't have anything to prove, and I'm very practical about it. I'm a very down to earth. There's no mystery behind it. If I don't understand something about my intuition or the experience I'm having, I go after it. Like, I don't see evil and demons and so on. I wanted to know what that was, so I went after it. And I said, you come here. Let's talk. And I got to the bottom of it. So now I have a way, I call it a foundation or a platform on which my belief system is created. So if I don't have an understanding, like when I was new at being a reader, I shook my fist at the sky and swore and got crazy and said, if you want me to do this, you better tell me the foundation of what this is about so that I understand exactly what I'm doing. And it came. So
Wow.
My premise on which I read is, and you'll be like, well, I understand that to be true too. But from my angle, I may see it a little differently. If everything is connected, therefore there is nothing which cannot be connected. Okay, it seems like a kind of a logical statement. But what that means is, no matter what I see, hear, smell, taste, feel, sense, experience, while I'm sitting with you and working with you, they're all connected. And my only job is to sense through, how does that all connect and configure to creating a story arc, which doesn't have to be real, but just a story arc so you can understand your life from a dynamically different perspective so it creates change.
Mm, that's cool.
It is cool, and who wouldn't want to do that? Although right. Our society has resistance because it's like this. Judy, we feel like we can't trust it because it is illogical. It doesn't make sense. I give the example so many times with people that if you're leaving the house in the morning and you get a message inside before you kind of get this hesitation before you take the next step to the car, go get a big umbrella. But you've looked at the weather. You didn't even wear a coat. You know it's going to be beautiful because it's hot out. It's summer. It's nice. But you heed that and you go and you grab the big umbrella. And then in the afternoon at 3 o'clock, you get a call from a frantic friend of yours who has young kids. And they say, oh my gosh, I've got this kid at the doctor. There's this unexpected thing. My other kid is going to get picked up by this mom, but I have one kid on the soccer field. Can you go and pick them up at 4:15 on the soccer field? And you say, that's fine. And you go out to the soccer field and you kind of talk to one of the parents and they say, oh, the game started late and we're going to have to be out here. And it's like 300 degrees on that field with beating sun. There are no trees to shade you. And you realize, haha, I happen to have an umbrella in my car to shade myself and stay cool. That's where it doesn't make sense. And I'll tell you this, with really high level messages, the one that I had when I was 27 that left me so afraid taught me everything I know about intuition. That was the catalyst. So if you have a fear experience you can't make sense of, it's probably because you have the ability inside of you to be a really high level intuitive. But that's a journey. And the other thing that I'll say is I still don't know what that message meant when I was 27 and I'm well into my 40s. And so I don't need to know, except for I feel like the information will come to pass what that meant because I never forgot the question. Mm. I never forgot what that imagery was about, but I just can't. It's like a dream where you can't quite place your finger on what does that part mean. And I don't take the time to sit down and always read for myself, which I could definitely do, because I've learned through what is personal intuition to intuition and reading energy for somebody else into reading energy for myself and how those differ for me. But probably if I sat down and spent time reading through it, I could make sense of it. But I kind of like it just to show up, you know?
Right.
I like the adventure of like, oh, there's another little tidbit. How about you excite me this way, universe? Because it's a little bit more fun that way than just knowing everything isn't the goal and in being an intuitive in keeps that, us- right? For me, my ilk and my energy is likened to the guide realm. And I never need to know if I have guides or not. We all have guides, but I don't, I mean, I don't mean to sound cavalier, but I don't care to know them unless they need me to know them. Mm-hmm. And there have been times when that has been an experience I needed and then it goes away. And so I'm more of the mindset that if we're forcing to try and know that and do this and reach out to that and talk to an angel and talk to this, we could get in the way of it versus get it to happen. And so I'm more available to, if you need me to know that information, you will indeed let me know. But I also can shut this off. That's what I learned when I was 27 is I had to shut it off because I was getting too much information. Not like, oh my God, I couldn't deal with it. There wasn't drama.
Uh-huh.
It was more like, hey, I can't handle all this. And it's clear you're tapping me on the shoulder and asking me to do this. And so here I am, but it's going to be limited in the way that I also am here to be a human. And, you know, like I said, I got married young and I didn't have kids for a while because we did some things, like we lived in Europe for a short time and so on. But
nice.
But yeah, but we, you know, I needed my life too, not to have this nudging. And so I set parameters on that, which is really helpful.
It's interesting. I'm listening to you talk about your version of overload. And I'm thinking of how the media sort of portrays that in various shows where it is the whole too much stuff coming at you. And it's interesting that your description of that is very grounding, I think, when thinking about how that really looks when it's not on television, if you know what I mean.
right. Well, you know what? I have a friend who, he's from India, and we were going out to eat at this Indian restaurant, and he said, we were like, oh, do you think you will like the food? And he was like, I think it will be like when you go out to eat dinner, the food is more rich than what you create at home. interesting little, you know. But maybe that's the same here, is the home version is more mild. I also feel, though, based on my contemporaries and my colleagues, I look at it quite differently. Not that I'm seeing different information, but with that experience, there's no drama for me. I don't, like I said, I don't have anything to prove, and I don't need to, I don't know. I never know how to say that part of it, I guess, but there's something different where I'm a very ungrounded people. If somebody read for me, they'd be like, you're way outside your body. But my premise is, until I need to understand and know that, I don't need to be in my body. That's my journey and my experience. And why would you judge that it should be otherwise? You know, I'm the same with things like gratitude. And you ask the question of, you know, what does it look like to love ourselves? And what I feel about that is, I think that most things are simple, that, and we make it hard for ourselves based on a lot of other factors, but things are simple and it looks and feels like calm, and it's easy, fun, calm. You know, it's just very simple, but it looks like, how do I say this? It looks like you know, what draws you out more than anything else? You know, how do we draw ourselves out? And I liken that to things, to draw it back to what we were saying, is like people that are like, oh, you've got to keep a gratitude journal, and oh, you better journal about this. And oh, and I think oftentimes people don't know why they're doing that. Mm-hmm. Don't really get the point is to learn tools that when you need them, you can go back to them. And to not, like, if you force yourself to write in your gratitude journal every day, you're doing the opposite of what you're really doing. Is you really want to naturally be grateful. So instead, I would say to them, why don't you challenge the universe or God or whatever it is for you, or just the ethers, and say, show me how to naturally have gratitude. Mm. Right. And then maybe something really awesome happens that day, and they feel a little bit of delight inside, and that starts to burn that candle of gratitude higher. Oh, tomorrow, show me a boatload of what it means for me to feel great. I mean, that's what I'm like saying every day, like, hey, today, let's, you know, let's cook up a crazy storm. You know? Like, how do we ride that like it's a catamaran? That's what we're supposed to do. That's how we love ourselves, is we trust that we indeed get to have that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm a human. I struggle. I get that. But I believe it is really feeling this goodness about yourself in the way that, I'll use Trump as an example. I know you're all like, oh, visceral reaction, perhaps, in a myriad of ways. But when he was running, my daughter and I were at a mall the night that the election was happening, mm-hmm. and it was really quiet in the store. But my friend texted me this on my phone, and I said to my daughter, oh my God, you know, my friend is saying that it looks like Trump is going to win. And our reaction was to step to each other and hold our hands on each other's elbows, supporting each other. Do you get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So hands out on the elbows. And we just stood there and we looked, I think, a tad frightened. But what I realized in hindsight and through several conversations with other women is, my daughter and I didn't stand there and hug each other and cry and feel sorry for each other. We were holding a position of power. If you're going to hold somebody and be like, what are we going to do? That's how you're going to hold them. And our reaction was a position of, this has to be empowered and changed. Well, then that night it looked very, very much like he was going to win. Mm-hmm. And by the morning, my daughter woke up and said, and cried. She had cried that night. She cried in the morning. And I said to her, by the time you get home from school, I will figure this out so it makes sense. And she said, okay, you know, she went to school and she got home, and I said, here's what it is. And she sat and she listened. And I said, he's throwing it in our face, Jane. And she's like, what is he throwing in our face? And I said, he might not have as much intelligence or integrity as you and I do about other humans, about all that, about the earth, but he manifests like nobody else.
He gets that is a
true thing in his pathway. And he does that to show us, why aren't we doing that? Why don't we feel that way about ourselves? Even though perhaps we have more integrity, perhaps we do care more about others. why aren't we doing that? And she was like, oh, I'm good. Which I love her for.
Oh, wow. So now that's interesting. And the struggle I have is kind of thinking about exactly what you're saying, is that you're right. He is able to climb the next ladder, manifest like crazy. Yeah. And my concern is how many people he steps on and how many people he's hurt along the way. I've worked around people like that. And for my personal stuff, I always feel like that is exactly who I do not want to be. And so I want to manifest, or I want to work my life in a good and positive way, but I see that, and I see other people like that. And it's the frustration of, there's got to be a better way than hurting people, stepping on people, making other people have to fall for you to rise.
You're absolutely right. So I can read energy patterns. I don't know. There's so many things I could say here, but I can track energy patterns week by week, month by month. And if we were to liken it to something, it's like astrology, but I don't know anything about astrology. And so in 2013 in November, an energy set in motion, and it came out generally the third week of November, a new energy comes in for the coming year. And that energy was about trust, and it was about love. And then the next month in December, that whole month was about trust in love relationships, and it got ugly. So then the really big one that I remember very well is in March of 2016, I literally could say, you are calling me, client, because you have communication issues with your partner. Or you are calling me, client, 3 weeks later, because now you are breaking up with your partner, because the energy arcs were so succinct for us to right the ship inside of ourselves.
Wow.
Of self-love. Uh-huh. So several years ago, I was at a class and this woman drew these circles on the board and she was saying, this is yourself. This is the universe, this is, you know, all this stuff. And I don't know what the heck she was trying to teach us. But the message that I got from what she wasn't saying was, oh my God, if we have fear, we will not self-express. And if we don't have fear, we will self-express and we will move into fulfillment. But we cannot move into fulfillment if we have fear. So we have to move through those thresholds of fear. Well, then as soon as I'm learning that, guess what happens? The energy arcs of the next few years play out to be that we're headed towards self-expression. Mm. So in 2017, the energy was about empowerment. And we saw that with the Me Too movement. And in 2018, it's been about the I am. Meaning in this year, if we have something to prove, we're not going to do well. Like Trump has something to prove, and I'll talk about that a little bit. He's proving everything, right? But he's actually proving nothing because he's mixing it. So he's talking out one side of his mouth and saying, this is what's going on, media. And they'll be like, no, I never said that. And he just said it, right? So, mm-hmm. So he's winning, but we're not going to go there. But that we are now arcing into this I am. If we can sit, and that's why I said, to me, love, self-love looks like calm, meaning we aren't, anxiety is produced through jumping through other hoops people are asking you to jump through. That's why we see so many high school students anxious out of their gourd. There's a study that went out many years ago. Well, it wasn't many years ago. It was probably within the past 5 years. And it said that 1,000 18-year-olds were surveyed around the United States. And their anxiety, once they evaluated those evaluations, was 80% higher than somebody who was institutionalized for anxiety in the 1950s.
I heard about that.
Right. So the deal with that is I sat back and said, why is that going on? And luckily, I have kids that were kind of entering those ages, you know? And what I watched is my completely calm kid who's like, she's so funny. She'll do the 6-hour project that's due every 3 weeks in her class that's really hard. And everybody usually takes 20 hours to do it, but she's a good reader and writer. But she will not do this tiny worksheet that's like takes 15 minutes. She just won't do it because to her, she doesn't even know why, but she does know at the deeper core of who she is. That's a hoop. And it will just produce anxiety for her because she's doing the bidding of something that will mean nothing in the long scheme of who she is. That's powerful. I would much rather have a child who is getting a C in a class because she doesn't agree with the teacher, because she knows within herself that does not fit who she is. That might sound crazy to people listening to this, but that's where we're headed. We're headed to a very different place where intuition is the thing. So I want to say this other story where I'm trying to work on this project to help people understand how they do indeed know. But I'm going to share this, and hopefully it'll kind of translate some of what I'm trying to get across. When I was having babies, the only thing that they had was amniocentesis, where they stick a very long needle into the amniotic fluid, take some of the fluid, and figure out if there's a genetic disorder with the baby, if that's needed. Mm-hmm. It was dangerous. The waters could rupture. There are just so many problems with that process. Mm-hmm. And in my scope, what we're going for long-term is less invasive, less invasive, less invasive. So then I was at my knitting group, and this woman came in, and she has a brand new baby. And she said, yep, we had to have amniocentesis, but there's something new. So we were all ears, all the women there. And she said, they take a pint of the mom's blood, and now they can separate the baby, the fetus's cells from the mom's cells, and figure out if there's any genetic issue going on there. And then my head, because I'm intuitive, flashed to, and I asked, I was not, you know, I was soliciting, like, what comes next? And what I saw were four midwives standing in front of this woman that's pregnant, just a woman. Mm-hmm. And she was laying on the table, and they were intuiting what is going on with that baby. And they each wrote down, all four of them, what they were, their intuition was. And when I looked at what their responses were, the woman who was standing on the left got a certain measurement and a certain, you know, the baby's gender and the health and so on. The woman on the far right got a completely different read. And the two in the middle got two reads. They couldn't understand. They had two. And then they realized when they put all their information together that that woman was pregnant with twins. One was a boy and one was a girl. And that the boy was measuring smaller and the girl larger, blah, blah, blah. So once that happens, where they start to trust that they know what's going on inside the parent, that can happen where I'm going to say it was midwives that showed up, because maybe they're closer to that than a Western doctor, maybe. Mm-hmm. And that then they're able to read that energy for that. And then they can test it to validate, to see, oh, we're hitting pretty accurately. Right. Intuition with babies and animals and such is pretty easy, because that vessel is very open for you to be connecting with it. You know, So anyway, that's what I teach, is we're headed in the direction that we become the iPhone, that we know how to, like, I teach a class about how to call your teenage kid home that's staying out too late without calling them on the phone, you know, right? We can elicit these energetic reflexes that we already have, and we don't really need to have all these devices and all these things. We really don't need money. I don't know what the world looks like with that, but I know that that's true. We don't, you know, and another thing I'll say there is, just to reflect back to anybody who might struggle with this, is as a reader, I don't use any tools. And what helped me adopt that, because at first I did use cards. I used Oracle cards just four times. And then from that, I'm like, oh, I can do this. But what I came to realize is like, we're born naked with nothing. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, everything is within us that we need to be able to make it. And so I adopted that as my way to read, is that it's always with me. I can read anywhere. I read on an airplane once, you know, I mean, anywhere, right? People can be thousands of miles away, because the quantum field where that energy is, which Greg Braden, who is an ex-NASA scientist, would define that as the energy between the atoms, is where this information is coming from. And I concur. I feel like that is a great way to say it. So we are already surpassing time and space if we connect into this illogical thing that is our intuition. And everybody has it. Everybody has it in at least two ways. But some people have it in more ways than just the two, but everybody has it in the two ways. So,
and in the two ways, meaning?
Well, it's your heart and it's your gut. And your gut area would be in the, like, where your tummy is, in your stomach, in the middle of where your rib cage opens up. Mm-hmm. And in your heart field, there's an energetic resonance or response where you know, like you might be driving and you're like, I just know I shouldn't go home that way. And then you turn on the radio and there's some accident on that highway that caused a 45 minute delay. That's that you're reading something from the quantum field. That's how you just said, I know I shouldn't go that way. Mm-hmm. And then our gut, which is clear sentience or clear sensing, is really this, you're at a party and there's somebody across the room and your gut is like, I can't go talk to them. And all night you end up not, or you maybe you overhear a conversation that they're having. You're like, yeah, I could not have handled talking to them about that, you know? Mm. So there are ways that we know. And I want to say this about Trump too, is while he seems like he's, you know, doing all these nasty things, part of what's going on there is spirituality is fierce. And if we need to see how much, like if we must expose how much hatred there is in our world to be able to heal it, he is a master at that. Then we can regard him for that. Like my son came home from school and said, Mom, Kim Jong-un is going to blow America up. President Trump has been tweeting and blah, blah. And my son has never experienced the threat of our lack of safety, right? Mm-hmm. It's the first time. My daughter had to, she was born with 9/11. And, you know, so that loomed. But he never has. So I said to him, let's just watch the process and see what happens. But I said, this is real for you in the way that this is the first time you've ever had to experience that. And my premise with that is, if my family is supposed to be alive and make it, we will be provided for with water, shelter, everything that we need will be provided. But if we're not, I can surrender to that. If we're supposed to die, I'm okay with that because that's my journey. It's our journey. I'm not going to be upset about that, right? So then I told him that. So that he can, I would say, that's my feeling, but you adopt your own, you know? Mm-hmm. So we watched. Well, then the Olympics came around and Kim Jong-un's sister was at the Olympics and there, South Korea and North Korea started talking and working some things out. And I said to my son, do you see if our president, by tweeting and being the way he was, behaving the way he was, and I'm not judging it there, just whatever it was, created two nations to become friends that are, you know, two nations next to each other to befriend each other when they had not for so long, that's a win. You know? That's a win. So, and I'm not saying like, oh, just don't look at the hatred. Don't, but right. How can we judge? Sometimes we might say something that hurts somebody and that was their journey and their experience that they needed to have to grow and learn. I have a very tricky mother and I said to her once, based on how much contrast you came here to provide for so many people.
Interesting.
You, clearly, your ability to love is profound and way beyond what I can imagine. And what I'm really saying to her is, you have created a shitstorm in so many lives. She's smart. She's tactical. She trained me about psychology better than any damn university could. And sorry to swear, but I'm grateful for that, even though it was right. Not easy growing up in that, right? Mm-hmm. But that to me, the irony is I could not have come here maybe and done that, but she could. And it has been a catalyst for a lot for me in a great way. So can we say that that was right or wrong? I don't know, but I could not have come and play the role of the crappy gal who did mean things. Right? So we need that tension to see our own inner stuff. And a lot of people are coming out of a heap of abuse. And my take on that is we are eradicating narcissism. And this generation, the generations that are on earth now, and maybe one more to come, are really the catalyst for stopping the premise that I know better for you than you know for yourself. Because that's what narcissism is to me at the cornerstone of it. And it really is about I know best for myself. So if you're going to love yourself, choose to know best for yourself. Challenge that doctor who's saying this thing to you. Challenge that person who is saying, you know, maybe Judy, you and I go out and we have a fun night. And then when we leave, you say, okay, well, it's been fun. Bye. And I feel like, my God, maybe she didn't have fun. Maybe, oh my gosh, my mind is racing. Clear the air. I know Judy's a nice gal. I know you're a nice gal. And why wouldn't I contact you and say, Judy, when we left, I felt kind of strange or off put, or is everything okay there? You know, mm-hmm. And then you can say, you know what, you said something that really hurt me. Or this is what we need to do to find that place, is if we neutralize the playing field, with people in situations, it's going to help us hold better boundaries. We will know how to hold the boundary. If you said to me, Judy, well, Amy, we did have a lot of fun, but I'm all done with you. That's coming from a place of proving you're something's wrong with you. And so then I can say, okay. And then maybe you call me and you're like, well, let's go out. And I say, you know what? I'm not able to do that right now. And you're like, well, how about next week? Nope. Well, is something wrong? No, Judy, I'll know when I'm able. And maybe 2 months later, I'll feel the neutralization of whatever energy is going on for you. And then you'll say, can we go out? And I'll say, we will. And we'll have a great time. That's not me being mean. That's me saying, it's not right. I don't know why. It's illogical. It's not right for me. Mm-hmm. It's not, oh, now it's right. And then we can really convene. Right. You know, I was speaking up in Duluth when we were there. Mm-hmm. And I said to a group of women in the lecture or whatever, you know, the breakout session.
Yeah.
I said, what will be coming is I will look at you, and I pointed my hand across the room, and I said, and I will know that we will be best friends. So come here and let's gather and let's connect. But I see you, and I know that we will never need to know one another. And so I'm grateful for seeing you here now. And that's as much as we'll have in exchange. That sounds really like I'm a machine, but that will be much more what we will be feeling, because there's going to be no judgment to it. It won't be, well, I kind of like her and she has a cabin and I've always wanted a friend with a cabin because I want to go to a cabin and she could take me. No, uh-uh. I just know, heart, that we have something to exchange. And I know that without really realizing it, perhaps we'll grow each other, or perhaps we can connect in a way that I am not able to connect with others. And that's more what will become. People will arc way over probably into crazy levels of self-expression. And then we'll come back to more of a calm space within, where kids will start bucking authority. Oh, and a bald eagle just flew by my window. Holy cow.
Oh, wow.
I know, it's right there. That we will hold these, I don't know what I was saying there, but the bald eagle took my mind away. Hold greater levels of self-expression and trust that knowing more.
It's interesting thinking of hearing what you're saying and the lack of judgment and the sort of the knowing of all of that, right? But then there's this whole other side thing that I think we sometimes call judgment, but maybe is more of an intuition, when you've got a person that you maybe don't want to get in the car with, or you know, somebody that you have kind of bad vibes from. I'm trying to think of a good illustration of this. I think of it as being a kid. And I think of how many times people would say, you know, don't judge that person. You don't know what's going on behind their head. And I think of as a kid, when I was very much, I want to stay away from that person because I don't feel that they're safe for me. And then they would end up being mean or do something cruel, or I would find out that my sort of reading on them was right. What somebody might call, well, you're making up a story about what they're thinking right now, would find out that would be true. And that my intuition was guiding me to stay away from that person, right? And again, I'm not explaining myself well.
I think you are, Judy. I think exactly what you're saying is true, where we must allow our children to trust themselves. And we must allow our children their empowerment. Like a parent who says something to a child, like the child falls down and hurts their knee and the child's crying and the parent says, you're all right, just shake it off, just shake it off. Now, I understand that there is a place for that in sports and some things. I feel like it's not wrong. It's not, but there also is this thing that we can try where, instead of going to, oh my gosh, poor thing, we can come to the midpoint and empower our children and say to them, are you all right? And the child can say, you know what, I am. I can brush it off and get up and run and play again, or whatnot. Or, you know what, mom, you know what would help is a hug. So by teaching our children that they can have needs, that they can communicate with us and they have that power and we're here to support them within reason. We can't support everything. But then we can clearly say to the kid, you know what, I'm not able to do that. But let me see if there's somebody else that we can get help or whatever, you know, we don't have to be everything for them. Like, you know, my daughter was taking math and I'd say, how can I support you? And she'd say, well, this and this, and this. I'd say, well, maybe your dad would be a better person to ask because he's better at math, you know, or whatever. So, but in that circumstance, we're giving the child their power to decide for themselves what their needs are. And people get so scared that it will take time and be a dramatic event. But if we teach children how to just kind of feel their feelings about, oh, this one's okay, it's not going to be a problem. Or, you know what, I hit too hard and it hurts in the bone. Or they don't have to be that medically savvy either, but just a bit of self-awareness and their ability to feel for themselves. Otherwise, they're going to be looking to you to constantly tell them who they are and how they feel. And that's why we're in this mess in the first place. Mm-hmm. And the other piece is the child who's raised the way that I'm talking, then in turn is grateful and is empathetic and compassionate by nature. And why that is they're receiving exactly what they need because they decided what they needed. They have a choice and they're in their power. But then, like with my kids, if I'm hurt or I'm just upset or something, my kids will say to me, Mom, what do you need? And then I can say, you know, well, a hug would help. Or, you know what, could you ever empty the dishwasher? I'm feeling way too like overwhelmed, or, you know, and my kids are very tender because they're not sensitive or wusses like we might. They are like, hey, Mom, they're very grounded, down to earth. They recognize that I'm an adult, but I also have needs. And I feel like that's really rare in our community to have a sort of a symbiotic relationship with our children where my kids are not my friends, but my kids also recognize I'm a feeling human being. Mm-hmm. And we need more of that. What people need more is understanding. And it's in the moment situations. There's a new show called I'm Sorry that's on Netflix. And if she's a little too much for me, but that woman is very much like me. That's probably why she's too much for me. Fair point. I mean, I'm very much like her. But in that story, there's one episode where she's a writer. She's really creative. She's, you know, doesn't hide anything. She says everything, but in a really creative, fun way. And her husband is a lawyer and he's a little more reserved and so on. Her child is 6 years old. The child is at the school and there's a new child at the school that the mom is dropping her kid off and meets the mom of this other new child. And she says, oh, hey, you're new here, you know, welcome. And it's a great school and so on. And I can't remember the child's name, but would you like her to come over for a play date on Saturday? Would that work for you? Because we'd love to meet you and get to know you. And the woman's like, you know, that would be really, really nice because I don't know anybody and it would really help out, you know, and just be nice for our kids to be together. So then the woman's daughter, who is hosting, the daughter starts saying things about, I don't like brown colored skin. And I don't, you know, she's six. So she's not getting this from her parents, but the mom and dad are mortified. They're like, this isn't part of our value system. We have no clue where it's coming from. And the way that this mom, she's partially really good as a parent trying to figure out, but she goes too far and that's her problem. So to me, watching that scenario, what could have really happened there is the family that was going to host ends up saying, we're not going to have you over because this family is African-American. Mm-hmm. And so the mom makes up some excuse saying, you know, we're not going to have you over and something came up, blah, 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 trying to figure this out. But really what she could have done is she could have called the mom and said, I have a really difficult situation and I'm embarrassed. And this isn't part of our value system, but by any chance, is it possible that you could come over and help me navigate this? And the mom could convey, I'm really uncomfortable. Like it makes me want to cry, or I feel like I'm going to be sick to my stomach. I really am upset by it. And I don't, I'm at a loss, but if my daughter says something to your daughter, I don't want to be upset about that. I need help because that's where our village comes in. And that other mom's perspective and this mom being vulnerable and saying, I'm terrified and I'm being vulnerable because I don't know what to do. That other mom can receive it as an opportunity to help support. Right. And say, yeah, we don't know what's going to happen, but let's have that play date and let's see what we can figure out here, you know? And the child in the episode comes through to say why that happened, you know, but mm-hmm. naturally, but that's where we can change things is that we don't have to feel like, oh my God, I'm afraid that my child is going to say something that could be construed as racist because that 6-year-old growing up in that family, she's not racist. Something's happening. And in order to get to the bottom of it and let that child keep moving toward empowered, we need players in it. And we need to just right. be vulnerable to say, I've got to break this wall down. You know, I don't feel this way and I don't know what's going on there. And it scares me, you know? Mm-hmm. So
I think we're starting to get there, but I think it is happening in some ways because of things that you are doing and other, and we're getting, you know, more television shows, which isn't the greatest way to learn things, but it starts to vocabulary and it starts to open people up to what might be possible. and opens those conversations. And I think, though, there is the logical side of the world that keeps pushing on us. There's a lot of people who are pushing back and kind of just saying, but here's my experience and I'm going to live in my experience.
For sure. For sure. But it's going to take us building more community.
Yes.
More community so that people, it neutralizes the playing field, you know?
Right.
Maybe the house on the street you thought was always clean inside and perfect is totally not because you were invited in once. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it is like the example of, you know, me saying, Judy, you and I hang out. And then when we leave, you know, this, the example there is it's a story in my head based on a feeling I had that I can't make sense of.
Right.
And so if I clear the air by asking you, then I know what choices to make that are right for me or whatnot, you know. That's all we really need to know is what choices are right for you to make. And when it comes to intuition, I want to stress too, when we're making choices, being an intuitive doesn't necessarily make those choices easier. Mm-hmm. It's the same. I'm also a human. Mm-hmm. And I revel in that more than I do being an intuitive because I'm here to live a human journey and have the experiences of the tricky parts and not being sure to do that or that or that, you know, and learning how to trust myself too. I'm right in this with everybody, you know.
Right. Right. And I don't know how you experience this, but I sometimes have the experience of, is this thing given to me right now? Is this the thing I should do because it's what feels right? Or is it somehow am I supposed to not do that because somehow there's this resistance I'm supposed to learn to say no, for instance, you know?
Yeah. Well, and here's what I say to that is there is an evolution of surrender that I teach about a little bit to release ourselves from the frenzy or the mind that's so busy. But in this case, what I recommend people do is like after they're done listening to this podcast or when they're finished making dinner, to pause for a second and ask yourself, what's next? Because the answer might inspire you. It might be like, go read a book instead of watching TV and getting into the same pattern. Mm-hmm. It may be like, go on a walk. But if we follow those little tiny inklings inside, that's how we put the bigger, bigger picture together.
I love that. And that's a simple thing. So what's next?
I just say to people, if you feel like you're going to say, like maybe your husband says, oh, hey, let's go to a movie. And you tune in inside and you get this, like in your chest pushing, like, there's a resistance there. It's no. And if you don't have an answer these days, the answer is no. Meaning you can buy yourself time and say, can I get back to you, you know, in a few days and let you know if I want to do that. But sometimes we don't have that choice. And if we don't have the choice and the answer was no, the answer is no. But if we wait a few days and the answer still feels unclear, the answer is no. We want to say a little bit more no than yes right now in that way of trusting that intuition. But then if somebody says, do you want to go to a movie with me? And it feels free in that chest area, you feel like, oh, I feel free there, or the gut area, by all means, go. And even if your head is like, I'm too tired, I have a headache, what am I doing? This is nuts. Follow it because it might take your headache away. It might make your gut ease. You might meet somebody you needed to meet. And had you not followed it, you didn't, you know, I'm not putting pressure on there, but that's the way of intuition is you sense your way through life. It's not really feeling or thinking. The power there is the sensing. My sense is I need to go and do that. I don't know why. Feelings, well, they may seem irrational, can be rationalized. I'm feeling sad because something, you know, my plant died today and I feel like I should have taken better care of it or, you know, whatever.
Right.
But the sensing is kind of hard to put your finger on sometimes, and that's it. It's subtle. It tends not to be overt. I mean, most of the time it's not overt. My fear experience with my intuition when I was 27 was my experience, meaning what I saw and experienced was not scary at all. But my mind, what I saw and sensed, my body and mind made that into something very scary. If I could have, well, let's say, had I known how to surrender immediately to that situation, I would have felt no emotion at all. But I didn't know how to surrender. It took me years of beating it into me. I had quite this journey of surrender. So now I like to say I'm a master surrenderer. And the truth of it is people will say, oh, I've surrendered a million times. Well, the bottom line is when we're at a constant state of surrender to me, That's my platform or my foundation of how I define peace. When we're at peace, we're at a constant state of surrender. Mm. Right? Nothing can impact us in a way that ruffles us to feel something other than peace. Right? That's peace. Because we're still gonna have the crappy stuff going on.
Right.
We're still going to have, you know, yep.
Right.
And I learned that through our cabin flooded out the second floor.
Oh, wow.
Winter, and it flooded so hard that the side of the house froze.
Oh, dear.
We got a phone call, and my husband and I said, it's fine. It will be fine. That's what we said. And it was fine. It was like a really cheap fix. And everything got dried out, and it was like very inexpensive. But that probably happened in the way of the law of attraction, because our attitude was, we stayed at peace. We're like, this is fine. It will be okay. We had no fear. We had no, we could have freaked out. Like, that sounds terrifying, right? It had been running several days. Oh my God, we wasted so much money on the water. We could have gotten so bent out of shape. The ceiling was ruined. There could be mold. If we go there, we create it. But we didn't. I don't know why we didn't. We were like, this will be, because we've been through so many house things that we're like, it will be fine. And in the end, it cost $600. It was so,
oh wow!
I know, and it was so simple, and nothing had to really be fixed. The siding didn't have to be fixed. The ceiling that it leaked into didn't have to be fixed. Nothing.
Wow, that's an amazing gift.
It is. So that's the power of the state of peace. Is
wow.
The other piece of peace is you. What's happening is you're really trusting at a deep level that all is truly well, even if you're in the middle of chaos, you know.
I am not a master surrenderer.
But okay, it's time, Judy.
But I do know, I tell you some of the, again, you're the feeling, the sensing thing, like I totally get that in some of the times when things have happened and I've been completely okay about it. And I can't explain why, because it's not, again, logical to be okay. At one point when Joel and I were, he had lost a job. He's like, why are you not freaking out about this? And I'm like, I don't know, but I'm going to run with it. You know, my choice to move to Duluth was it's a completely illogical financial decision, but it's the right thing to do. And, you know, one of the best things I've done in my life. So I totally get that. And then, then there are those moments when I am not in surrender that I,
yeah.
And I'm thinking about it, like, okay, how do I deal with this?
Right. But you know how to do it. And we really, the way to treat yourself if you're in a situation where you're really scared or struggling is to say to yourself, what is the greatest thing to which I would need to surrender right now to feel okay? Mm. And boy, it'll come. You'll be like, oh, if I were to die and blah, blah, blah. Or if I were to whatever it is, have no money and be destitute, or it will. And then you can address that. You can make friends with it and say, oh, I see that's my greatest fear. But I don't have to feel that, because that's not the truth now, you know? Right. Yeah. I mean, I think we all do get this on some level, because I think everybody's done it. I think everybody's had an intuitive hit.
Right.
At whether they're aware of it or not, it matters not. The people who fight it, they could be the most intuitive people on earth. Do you know what I mean? And they're fighting it because, let me tell you, it's not a picnic always being an intuitive.
Right.
You know, it is kind of different. It makes you different. I was very different in elementary school, and it stuck out, and it was really not fun. I clearly thought completely differently. I was having, you know, I had an experience where I saw something that, thank God I didn't say anything, because I went to a private Catholic school. They would have, who knows what they would have done with me. And I was already terrified to be there. The jumping through hoops, it's like this, and I don't mean this in a way of arrogance, but perhaps as a child, I already knew that I had everything within me and I did not need to know anything more. And I would learn it best on my own through observing others, but that's not how school's set up.
Right.
And it was really hard for me to learn through using a textbook and watching the teacher write it on the board, and all these things, they made no sense to me. And I'm not saying like, oh, the school system failed me. I'm saying I would not learn that way. And I couldn't pretend like I couldn't, like, or I couldn't pretend like I could, you know?
Right. You've talked a little bit in the beginning of who you work with. And I want to get back to that a little bit of who are the people that you work with. And one of the points you bring up is asking the right questions. Like, it sounds like that's been one of your gifts anyway, that's something when we can figure out or have help doing that, can be so huge for us when somebody says, no, how about asking the question this way? And it's like light bulbs and strobe lights, and it's amazing. That right on its own is such a huge thing. And so you working with people and the intuitiveness and then honing into the right question, it sounds like so much faster than therapy.
Well, right. It is faster than therapy. And some people have said that to me. I've had two clients who said that after 20 years, and one of these clients was really young, kind of scared me, but after 20 years of therapy, in 5 minutes, I got it. So the thing that I'll say to that is, it's not like, oh my God, Amy, you understood so well. They were ready for it, right? They may have needed all of that experience of the 20 years prior for me to sink that putt into the hole. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That you really could get it in that moment.
Right.
But the reality is that that's very true. And my husband said, you should go and get your psychology degree because, you know, go do that. You'll be able to, you know, bill out through insurance and so on. But I said to him, I don't want to be bound to those rules. I want to be able to hug my clients. I want my clients to potentially know where I live. I don't want to be unlisted and all these things because I look at it very differently. But I am good at asking the questions, and I'm good at taking what their information that they're asking of me and going in and then whittling it down until I get to this really clear answer of, oh, here's another way for you to look at it, and here's a way that you can step forward. So to answer your bigger question, the client that I really serve tends to be a creative that is traditional or non-traditional, meaning some of my clients are artists that are actually practicing artists, but also people who are more creatively inclined. They may be good problem solvers. They may just be people who are also in a field that's creative, but not directly hands-on, like interior design and so on. But they're people who are curious and somewhat creative in their own process. They might be very intuitive themselves and wondering how to do that and work with it. I also work with people who, you may not be aware of this at all, but they're at the midpoint of their awakening journey, meaning they've stopped searching and they feel stuck and kind of sick of it, bored with it. Like, I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, there's got to be something different for me here. And that's really when people are coming into their intuitive space more. They're looking at the world from, how do I find who I am and the pleasure to be that person? And that's really where the work that I do takes hold and can help you see yourself at a much more expansive level. And also things like, for an entrepreneur, I mean, I've seen very clearly for many entrepreneurs, the exact pathway of where they're to head. Now, there may be some hows in there that you as an individual have to step forward and actually take action and set things in motion so that you may have some unknown, I don't know how that's going to happen. But you can trust then, oh, this is where I'm headed and this is how it looks. As if I'm not feeling that way about it or that's not what's going on, I'm going to be off track, you know. So that's another benefit to the work I do, is people will come for one session and then they might come back 6 months later. That the processing of what we've experienced in that session runs long for them. And one of my colleagues, which I feel really proud, I mean, she does really well in her own right, said to me, Amy, your readings are timeless. She had had a reading several years ago and recalled it and listened to it. And she said, I can't believe how much of what you said still applies to what I'm finessing now in my life. And I knew inside to go back and seek your reading again. Like, I, you know, so there's a great energy around it too, I think, that creates a catalyst for your entire life. My goal is with clients that they outrun my intuition, meaning they come, they get the information, but they learn how to trust from within themselves, how to do it for themselves. And when I hear a client say to me, I knew before I came here, I didn't even need this appointment. I already know what the answers will be, but I read for them anyway. And then we get through the session and they say, uh-huh. Then my work is done. And thank God you got it. You're smart. You got, I mean, it's not intelligence, but they put it together. They put it together. They put it together and they trusted their own intuition through observing me do it for them. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I totally.
And that's the greater point of what we're doing, is it teaches you to trust yourself. So it's powerful. I mean, there are things I've seen. I can't believe that I saw that clearly and it worked. It was that succinct, you know? So Yeah, sometimes it astounds me, but again, I'm a human, so I also get to be in awe, you know? Mm-hmm.
In my mind, I see that as a good thing that you're in that place, right? That's the way I want my person to be, rather than they will. Of course, I knew that, and of course that happened.
Right, you know? And that's what I say about the drama. I don't appreciate that. I don't appreciate people that just spot read for you right there and say, well, you know what? I'm feeling this from you. Or I don't believe that entities are hanging on us or bad things are happening to us. I can explain that in a completely different way. So to me, makes much more sense. It's much more human-based than a human who is dealing with a much bigger thing that to me is kind of conjured because of the situation. I'm not saying that they're lying, but I think I can explain what is going on there. So I do. I really attend to that we're humans, and it's not rocket science, and it's your innate birthright. You know, I say to people in my tagline for my business is open yourself to a world which is indeed yours. It's all yours. This is your world that I'm reading about. Mm-hmm. So open your own self to it. Over time you will, you know, that's my goal.
How exciting. I mean, what a beautiful thing. And I know from my own life of just having those moments of clarity and being able to trust yourself and having the confirmation or having things unfold are just, it's like, you know, it's like this relief and this burden in a sense lifted. And I love that you're doing the work that I can imagine is huge to help so many people that way, whether they're little things or big things. The little things can be huge, right? I mean, huge.
Right.
I know that you've got some retreats, and I want people to know how to find you and other things that you are doing that they might participate in to either meet you or get to know your work or experience your work.
Oh, Judy, that would be great. Yeah, I would love it if you come and take a look and see if it's a match for you. My website is Intuitive Pathfinder. So intuitive and then path, P-A-T-H, finder.com. And I do. I have a lot going on. I'm trying a lot of experimental things lately too. So I have a variety that I think is kind of exciting. Like I'm doing some free online co-working to help people get things done and hold them accountable. And I'm teaching these really inexpensive classes about all things intuitive. So the one coming up is intuitive eating. And then I have one about intuitive parenting. And really my goal there is to help people just get exposure to small micro bites of how intuition plays in our life and how it's so subtle that we're already doing it. We just didn't really know it somewhat. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I would love that. I do have retreats that are coming up as well. So,
and the classes are in-person classes?
You know, they're actually right now, no, they are ones that are there. They are in person, but they're online. So I'm doing classes through Zoom because I do have clients that are away from where I live. And honestly, it's just really easy to meet up there. So that's what I'm doing right now. Yeah.
Okay. So to work with you, it can be online anywhere in the world, or do you do in person too?
I do. If they're local to me, I do meet people at coffee shops and so on. Yeah.
Okay. And everything is listed on your website, so we can find everything there.
Yes, it is. Fantastic. You should have access to everything. I also have a clarity session. If you're not sure if there's something that I can offer for you, but you are struggling, you're welcome to fill that clarity session out. And then I'll go over the information, and if needed, we'll set up a 30-minute conversation, which is, it's all free to you, to give you resources and information that could support you. You know, I have a lot of knowledge, and so there might be a book or YouTube videos that are free to listen to help you get to the next place that you're aiming for. And then if those things include something that I offer, I'll surely mention that too. So definitely that's, you know, really easy. I also have a Facebook page that's private called The Glint, G-L-I-N-T, Being Brave Enough to Be You. And that's a private page where I do sometimes free readings where you ask your question and I read about it. Or I post, you know, I'll do a reading with using Oracle cards for fun, or I'll post, a blog post or information that's going to support where we're at right now. Sometimes I do just impromptu live videos. If the energy is really intense, I might do a healing session on that Facebook page, or a reading, just so that people are not feeling like they're alone in that energy. Sometimes I think we're tough on ourselves and we feel, you know, like our gut's all out of whack and we're really tired and crabby and we have no clue why. And we make, you know, well, probably this is going on, or maybe I have a bug. But then when you hear that energetically is what's being impacted, and you see other people's posts saying, oh my God, thank God I've been experiencing that all week.
Right.
You don't feel so alone. So quite a bit of the work that I do is to neutralize the playing field and to teach you how to trust yourself and your choice and your boundaries and all of that. So
lovely.
Yeah, thanks.
So
yeah,
I love it. I'm excited and inspired. From
that's great. Thank you.
It's been just fun getting to know you, and I'm so glad that I happened to walk into the room when I did to get to meet you.
Exactly, it was perfect timing. Yeah,
it was, and I got to learn about vagina massages too. I mean, who could lose? This is a win-win deal.
Well, I think that's really unique. So I thought, boy, I've got to connect you to her. But yeah, thanks for having me, and thanks for the flexibility. On, you know, I know we've been trying to do this for a few months, but
yeah,
it's nicely now. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, that was a good time. I hope it was for you too. I do have one retraction/correction that I need to make. I realized when I was editing that I misspoke, and I do like to keep things as accurate as I possibly can. I mentioned at one point in the conversation that Joel had lost a job, and when I listened to it, I realized that probably what people are going to take away from that is that he was fired, and in actuality, he left the job choosing to lose it. Thank you so very much for listening. You can check out all of the episodes at the wellnessrenpodcast.com page. You can find Wellness Renaissance on Facebook as well. Connect there. Also in the notes, I will put a link to the Facebook event page for the Friendsgiving or the Integrative Health Potluck that I mentioned in the introduction. If you're not on Facebook, you are welcome to email me and ask any questions that I can pass on, or let me know that you're coming and I can pass that on too. And you can email me at judy@wellnessren.com. Please consider supporting the podcast. Perhaps that's sharing this information with other people who might be interested. You help the podcast grow. You also, of course, help the information get out of the people who are on the podcast and spreading their gifts around, and that is a wonderful thing. You can become a financial supporter by clicking the big red Become a Patron button through Patreon, where there are many options as to what that might look like. And of course, if you're an Amazon shopper and you go to the website first, the wellnessrenpodcast.com website, click on Support the Podcast and enter Amazon by clicking any of those links, and a tiny portion of your purchase, no cost to you, will go to supporting the podcast. And of course, we're on iTunes, and reviews on iTunes or even Facebook are sincerely appreciated. Don't forget to sign up on the website for the weekly emails that we send out whenever we release an episode. Just a quick message to let you know what the episode is about, and an easy way to get there. Have a productive and bountiful week. And until next time, may you find more pieces that fit into your health and wellness puzzle. Be well.